Blog Talk Radio.
If you thought Hannibal was returning for a fourth season, I'm afraid I've got some bad news. NBC canceled the show this past Monday due to that old bugaboo of theirs known as low ratings. I'm not totally surprised, however, by this. Usually the more cerebral television shows have almost always don't last, going the way of the flying hummingbird, small and going fast. Fortunately, it does appear Hannibal will be picked up by a streaming service, most likely Amazon Prime. It is a shame that the network did cancel a show. And what I don't understand is the viewing public can have a healthy appetite for The Walking Dead, American Horror Story, numerous reality shows, and bland inoffensive comedies, but when an inspired, elegant series is offered, it is virtually ignored by the public. But then again, like most cult shows, the shelf life deserved to be short. Otherwise, Hannibal may have run the course of Season 9 of X-Files, Season 3 of Star Trek, the original series, or who knows. So for the next 10 weeks, just sit back, enjoy Hannibal, digest it, swallow it, chew it, eat it all up, weaklings. You know what I want for my birthday next week? I want a brand new soundboard. This thing is such a fucking piece of shit right now. You've got to be kidding me. Hey now, what is up? A tremendous Thursday evening to you. And welcome to another edition of Dollar Bin Horror Radio. My name is Eric Polk, and it's all the books you want and all the books you will ever need on this week's episode. It's Love the Printed Page, and if you love Stephen King, Edgar Allan Poe, Peter Straub, Mary Shelley, H.P. Lovecraft, or many other fine horror novelists, then this is going to be the show for you. And tonight at around 7:30 Eastern Time, author Robert Holt of the novels Death Disciples and The Vegetarian Werewolf will be our special guest. So if you guys want to get on the conversation, you best do it now. The number to call is 1-877-552-4073. But as you know, I cannot handle the burden of a weekly one-hour internet-based radio show all by myself. On the other end of the tin can string, funded by an evil corporation. Oh, yes. She is the lord and mistress of dollarbinhorror.blogspot.com. And she, like me, is very tired right now and could really use a five-hour energy drink. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome back to the show, Miss Ronnie Reaper.
Hey, everybody. What's up?
Oh, I'm tired. So
tired. You have no idea. Oh, my God.
It's been a long week for both of us. Yeah. Believe it or not, kids, we have actual jobs outside of this radio show.
And
this
they
week does
suck.
Really suck. Hell yeah, they suck. Hell fucking yeah, they suck.
I don't want to be an adult anymore. Can't I go back to being a kid? Fuck this.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, I want to go. I don't want to do any more adulting anymore this week. I want to go
no.
and eat a bowl of. Yeah, I don't. I'm going to go back and eat the rest of my Darth Vader Star Wars cereal and, you know, watch some cartoons on Roku or something. You know, relive Saturday mornings. Maybe some Groovy Ghoulies or something. There we go.
I want to watch some Blue's Clues and some fucking Scooby Doo. Fuck this shit.
Exactly. All right, 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call if you guys want to get in tonight. International callers, 323-843-6113. And don't forget, author Robert Holt. He is the writer of Death's Disciples and The Vegetarian Werewolf. He joined us at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay, so the big news coming out of horror this week is the cancellation of Hannibal. NBC dropped the bombshell on Monday, and after three seasons of, frankly, mediocre ratings, they've given the show the boot. And people like
suck.
Me are, Yeah, NBC has a very low tolerance for cult shows over the years. Just ask a Star Trek and Quantum Leap, or Nightmare Cafe for that matter, if you want to go into the realm of horror, or when they tried the Dark Shadows revival in the early 90s. Their track record has been, shall we say, less than exemplary. I can't pronounce the words and I can't talk. But it's sad because it is the best show on television. I mean, it's a bloody good mess, but there's such an elegance to it. There's an intelligence that you do not see in a show like The Walking Dead or over the top budget horror like American Horror Story. This was cerebral. It was slow burning. You know, you wanted to sit back and watch it. This was a show essentially made for grown-ups. But in the age we live in today, the viewing public has a very low tolerance for this stuff, and that is a damn shame.
They don't understand good TV. Like, all the shows I seem to like get canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate this fucking show, and maybe it would stick around longer.
That's what I should have done. But if you're not, Hannibal's going to finish his run on NBC, and the show developer Brian Fuller has said more than likely it'll be picked up by Amazon Prime since they own the rights to the first three seasons anyway. It looks like Netflix will be a no go. But
I've never used Amazon Prime.
They have their own streaming service now. It's like Netflix or Hulu or. They've had that for a while, so I guess I may have to break
down
and actually get the...
Though, because I don't have cable, because, you know,
yeah,
I don't have
exactly.
money for cable, so what the hell makes you think I'll have money to stream shit like that?
Yeah.
Damn it.
You know, it's a freaking shame. You know, it was, as I mentioned, it is the best show on television, and I'm going to slaughter this guy's name, so please forgive me out there. You know, for getting this wrong, but Mads Mikkelsen, he plays such a very cold and such a distant Hannibal Lecter. I mean, Anthony Hopkins, he won an Academy Award for his role, and it was well-deserved. You know, he was just kind of sinister and maybe a little bit over the top. And Mads just kind of backs up and, you know, very sparse, very cold, you know, calculating, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, and I kind of feel bad for Gillian Anderson because she looks so damn good in this show. But
I apologize in advance for the barking you may hear. I believe my dog sees a cat. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's ironic because my cat's here in the studio with me right now. That would be Penny. And she is flipping out as we speak. So maybe they have a telepathic link or something. Or,
oh, my God.
Who knows?
Lay down.
Anyway, getting back to what we're talking about, the number to call if you guys want to get in tonight is 1-877-552-4073 for international listeners. The number to call is 323-843-6113. Okay, Ron, you've got a couple of reviews you are wanting to do tonight. The most recent episode of Aquarius, and I believe you also watched Jurassic World.
I did. Let me get through Aquarius real quick, because this is the episode that I was telling Joe. If you really like eye candy, this is the episode for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene, this is the biggest part. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens, but this is a scene that makes it for me. David Duchovny's character is kind of getting sick of, you know, Manson shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, he's a recovering alcoholic, and today he decided, guess what I'm doing? Fucking drinking. So he gets drunk, goes berserk, goes down to Manson's fucking lair and, like, beats the shit out of Manson. I mean, like, almost within an inch of his life. He, like, kicks the shit out of Manson. And there's
mm-hmm.
a scene where the girls are trying to, like, heal Manson with period pads. It's fucking, yeah. Couldn't find any gauze pads, but we got period pads. Anyway, Manson got nothing on but something, you know, covering his groin.
Yeah.
And again, I never thought I'd say this, but damn it, the guy who plays Manson is really fucking cute. So it was a very nice scene for me, personally. Just saying. But the show overall, you see Brian, the partner of David Duchovny, he gets into Manson's world even deeper, and he actually kind of gains Manson's trust during his undercover work. He helps Manson heal, and he gets even closer in there. The daughter, the main character, Emily, I believe, she, you know, they brought her back home last week, but of course, Sadie, one of Manson's girls, dresses up like she's a schoolgirl, comes to the house and says she's here to study with her and helps Emma escape again. Emma, I can't remember. Oh, my God. Anyway, she helps her escape again so she can get back to Manson. So she was home, now she's not again, which is why David Duchovny went all batshit crazy and decided to kick the fuck out of Manson. And that's pretty much the whole, pretty much what you need to know about that episode. I mean, it wasn't like a major plot twist in the whole series kind of episode, but it definitely mm-hmm. was an eye candy episode. Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Yeah, I think I need to go back.
Oh, and of course, the Black Panthers. You see, the black man that David Duchovny arrested just to get, you know, the other guy to confess in the first scene kind of got pissed off and decided to join the Black Panthers. And that racial tension definitely starts flaring up in this episode. When David mm-hmm. Duchovny was trying to investigate a murder, the Black Panthers were all like, white honky, mm-hmm. back the fuck up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you definitely see the beginning of the racial tension start in this episode. That is a key point in this episode for the series, I would assume. But there's no, like, major plot twists in this episode. There's just the Black Panthers are involved, and Manson gets his fucking ass kicked. There you go.
That in a nutshell.
Pretty much. And Manson's almost naked.
Well, to each their own, I suppose.
Hey, who plays him is freaking cute. I'm not saying Manson's cute, but the guy who plays him is.
I think I told Jolene this. I said he reminds me of a 1980s era Peter Criss. Look up some pictures. I'm referring to the former drummer of Kiss, of course. 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call if you guys want to get in tonight. We're about 18 minutes away from author Robert Holt joining us as our guest this week as we discuss some of his works. Okay, so Jurassic World, of course, the fourth movie in the Jurassic Park series.
I can describe it in three words.
Only three?
Yeah. Bad fucking ass.
Oh boy. Well, let's hear it. Why was it bad fucking ass?
Okay. It was completely action packed, like from the fucking get-go. The get-go, you already are introduced to the main characters, the two little boys. They're going on a trip, you know, to see their aunt while their parents are fucking busy planning their goddamn divorce. Kind of sad. But when they get to the park, they're expecting to be able to spend the whole weekend with their aunt. They're excited. Their aunt's actually the person who, she's not the owner of the park. We see the owner of the park later. Spoiler alert, we also see the owner of the park get his fucking ass owned in a helicopter crash. That's all I'm saying. But she's the kind of, she's the woman who runs the park. She's the business aspect of the park. And at the beginning of the movie, you absolutely fucking hate her. She's also an actress from the Twilight movies.
Oh, God.
She was actually really good in this movie.
I mean, when you're coming off of Twilight, I suppose.
Yeah, anything looks good. But...
Yeah, really.
Fucking hate her in the beginning, and by the end of the movie, you're absolutely rooting for her. So it's a cool way of getting you involved in the characters. And Chris Pratt's character. Holy crap. I think the little boy said it best when he looked at the woman and said, "Your boyfriend's a badass." I mean, how many motherfuckers do you know have his own pack of velociraptors that actually listen to his ass? Kind of cool. Although, I mean, again, spoiler alert, if you're listening and you haven't seen it yet, I don't know where the fuck you've been, because it has reached past the $1 billion mark worldwide, so you must be living under a rock. But spoiler alert, I'm sorry, this actually made me sad. Only one of the four velociraptors survived. Like, literally, I might have teared up a little bit. I might have, I'm just saying. But the best part is the ending, the end fight scene. Okay, we all know from reading the reviews and everything, it's going to be T-Rex versus... I can't remember the name of the dinosaur. It has an X in it. Indominus Rex. Ha! I remembered it. Well, first of all, let me get back to the main point. They created a new dinosaur. Apparently, seeing actual fucking dinosaurs wasn't enough for people anymore. It wasn't as exciting. I don't understand how that was even possible because, you know, they're extinct and you brought them back to life. But apparently that's not exciting enough. So they had to create a new dinosaur. And what it's made out of is classified. They won't tell you exactly what went in it. Which is one of the big fucking problems with trying to fight it. Apparently they put a type of frog in it and a type of lizard in it so that, A, it can camouflage itself. It can change colors and camouflage itself in the fucking woods. And the type of frog they used can, like, beat heat-sensing detectors. It can beat fucking heat radar. So that at one point in the movie, they thought it escaped from the cage. It had not escaped yet. It was simply beating the radar so that when they opened the fucking door, it finally did escape. Like,
now,
and they brought back an original character. They did. Dr. I think it was Wong or Wu, the original doctor from the first one when he's like, what kind of, in the first one, Dr. Malcolm asked, no, not Dr. Malcolm, but he asked what kind of dinosaur it was, and the Asian doctor said it's a velociraptor. That Asian doctor is back, and he turns out to be a complete fucking dickhead asshole.
Like,
seriously, asshole. He doesn't give a fuck about anything else. He's like, I'm the best scientist, and I fucking made this dinosaur, and I'm badass for it. Like, no, you're a douche.
Wow.
But I think there's going to be another one, because he kind of escapes unscathed on a helicopter, I think, with a sample of Indominus Rex. So I think there could be another one.
Oh,
but
I'm sure. I mean, making $1 billion.
End, we all, what was it? What I was trying to say was the fight scene at the end. We all knew from reading the reviews it's going to be T-Rex versus Indominus Rex. Okay? And the Velociraptors, if you read the reviews, the Velociraptor that survived helps the T-Rex. But I'm not going to say which one it is, but there is another fucking big-ass, motherfucking badass dinosaur out here that is involved in this fight scene that I did not know was involved. And when you see it, you will, like, literally start screaming, oh, shit! Because that's exactly what I said.
Now, I read an article somewhere that people are in uproar because one of the ladies was wearing high heels. What the hell was that about?
I swear to God, I was watching it with my brother, and the first thing I fucking said was, how the fuck does she do all that running? Is she still wearing them damn shoes? And then later on, she's like, you see her feet, and I'm like, oh my God, she really is still wearing them damn shoes. Like, she doing all this motherfucking running through these damn jungle-type areas and through the park, and fucking, I'm like, damn, bitch. I can't even walk in high heels, and you running from a fucking T-Rex in them.
Apparently there was a lot of...
T-Rex, remember Dr. Malcolm and the Flare from the first movie?
Barely. I haven't seen it in like
when
over
20
years.
When he was chasing the T-Rex and he was trying to like bait it with the Flare. Oh, the Flare is back.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And again, fucking high heels. I was literally looking at my brother like, is she still wearing them shoes? Like, I would have kicked them shit. I would have kicked them fuckers off in like 10 minutes. Not even...
Yeah, apparently there was a lot of rage over that. I mean, I caught much ado about nothing, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's just
a
pair of shoes.
So.
I mean, I noticed it. I thought it was funny, but it didn't take away from the movie at all. I don't understand what the uproar about her being in some fucking heels are. It's not like she can change.
I think it's because the culture, because of the social media and how hypersensitive a lot of people are. They are just, they're looking for things to rage about in the movie.
Think about it, though. You're in a situation, you're running through, like, a wooded forest. I said I'd kick them off in, like, 10 minutes, but if you actually think about the situation, she's running through, like, a jungle-type area. You're either, A, going to run barefoot and cut the fuck out of your feet, or, B, you're going to run in some damn heels and hopefully not break your ankle. I'd probably rather run in the damn shoes so that I wouldn't cut my feet to all hell and not be able to ever run. I mean, it's not like she's going to pull a pair of sneakers out of her ass.
Well, you know, maybe CGI some shit. Who knows? All right, 1-877-552-4073 is the number to call if you guys want to get in on the conversation tonight. With our national listeners, 323-843-6113. Our special guest, author Robert Holt of Death's Disciples and the Vegetarian Werewolf, will be our special guest here in about 10 minutes. But right now, it's time for our another look at our brand new segment here on DBHR, We have a Twitter page now. You can follow us at DBH Radio, and it's we've had it for about a month now or so, and it's been a blast going on there. You know, talking to celebrities that are actually following us, like Felicia Rose and Greta, very nice lady. We met her in the Cleveland Cinema Wasteland back in October, and looking forward to another one. Yes. So for this week's edition of Celebrity Fishing, somebody followed us. And if you do not know who this person that's following us is, then you need to get your head examined. Because he was a part of one of the most beloved Christmas movies of all time. And I'm talking about Scott Farkas. Yes, Farkas is following us now. The man who got the kid who got the shit beat out of him by Ralphie. I'm talking, of course, about Zach Ward. He's following us now. I am very surprised. The word of Darwin Horror Reading must be spreading, because I never would expect that somebody of his caliber would be following us. But he's been in a few horror movies, actually. You know,
with our luck, he probably clicked follow by mistake.
that's probably what happened, because he hasn't responded to us. Hasn't really responded to us since I said thank you for following us. And see, that's the thing. If you guys follow us at DBH Radio, if you do follow us, we will acknowledge you and thank you for following us, because that's just kind of people we are, unless you're one of those
Twitter people.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm addicted to Twitter as I am, you know, showing my appreciation to those who take a second to follow us, unless, of course, you're one of those douchey spam Twitter pages. You know, we got to follow
X video. Oh my god!
Yes, a realty company from New Orleans was trying to follow us, and I blocked that shit. I'm like, what's this guy do with anything?
Oh my god! I'm gonna go buy a house. What?
In New Orleans.
Hell yeah, voodoo country. Yeah. What?
Yes, and get destroyed by a hurricane every few years. I don't think so.
Oh shit.
Yeah, you know.
Well, it can't be any different than Cleveland. 2 days ago they said, we're going to have a pretty sunny weekend. And then today they're like, no, the fuck we're not.
Yeah. It's down here near, it's the same down near here where I live at, you know.
Fuck this weather.
Yeah, a lot of rain's been happening down here. It's been a rainy June.
Like, fucking too much.
But anyway, Farkas, we want to thank you for following us, and I pose a question regarding tonight's episode. What's your favorite movie based on a novel? And somebody replied, gave me a smart ass answer, so I quickly toss him to the side. You know, if you can't give me a serious answer, you're gonna get run.
That's actually
so,
for me. And if you don't know the answer, you shouldn't be my friend.
Yes.
You better know the answer to this, Eric.
Okay, but for the indulge us for the ones who don't know,
no, no.
Who are listening to the show for the first time.
I want you to try.
Okay.
What is my favorite movie based on a novel?
Well, it's Lord of the Rings.
Damn right. Don't you even start with me.
Yes, but what about in horror? What's your favorite movie based on a horror novel?
Ooh.
Yeah, here's a good question.
off the bat, I'd probably say Misery.
Misery? Okay. That's a good choice. Kathy Bates won a very...
Misery. That was fucking badass.
No, Kathy Bates won an Academy Award for that, for her performance as Annie Wilkes, and it is well-deserved. Oh, my God. I still get creeped out when she smashes Paul Sheldon's feet. What's that?
The sledgehammer. In the novel, she actually cuts one of his legs off. But
yeah,
I see the image of the sledgehammer and the wood block in between. I think that's even fucking worse. Like,
yeah,
oh,
and the
God.
And the foot, and the foot move, and the, and you know, when she hits and the foot moves, that's just like,
ow!
Oh my God!
It's 2 seconds. Ow!
Yeah, and you know how they say the book's better than the novel? Well, it is, but the But I said
but
the book's better than the novel.
Oh, that scene.
Yeah.
Oh, just visualizing it. I mean, in the book, to visualize someone getting their leg cut off, that's one thing, but you actually see the fucking little ankle go,
moving.
You didn't
even need
blood for that. It was just bad.
There have been some great Stephen King adaptations, you know, based movies based on his work. The Mist, I saw that last year, and that, oh my God, the ending.
That is a movie that even Stephen King said, I wish I would have wrote that ending.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I remember watching it, and I was waiting for the camera to pan up and to see stars, waiting for a Rod Serling narration. That's what immediately came to mind after I saw the ending and the credits rolled.
Oh, that
you
movie,
know.
Literally, I was screaming. I can't really say that. I do yell at the screen a lot. But that is a movie where I literally was like, I almost got kicked out of the fucking theater.
Wow. Well, see, I wasn't too crazy about the CGI monsters in that they were really weak. Yeah, really weak. But the ending saved the movie for me right then and there.
The ending and the religious lady. Because the religious lady, I mean, she was the most fucking annoying-ass character in the movie, but her acting was so good that you kind of liked it.
Yeah. That's the thing I noticed about, you know, my wife pointed this out to me one time when we were, I think we were watching either Under the Dome when we were still liking that show or another movie that featured one of Stephen King's religious nuts. It always seems like he always writes characters that have this religious mania, and I had to keep reminding her, you know, there's Father Callahan from Salem's Lot. He's far from crazy, you know.
Now,
anything,
when you say adaptions, can that also be from comic books? Or graphic novels?
I guess we can throw that in there, I guess.
Because I was going to say, as soon as I thought of that, I'm like, I really liked From Hell.
Okay, I didn't read the graphic novel. Oh, the Johnny Depp movie?
Yes, it was based on a graphic novel by the same name.
See, I did not know that. I mean, I liked the movie and everything. I liked the atmosphere of it, you know, the whole concept, you know, the Headless Horseman and Ichabod Crane. That, or is that,
wrong
or,
movie.
That was Sleepy Hollow. Wrong movie.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Then I haven't seen then
this one was
okay,
based
then
off
I haven't
the
seen From
the
Hell,
River
then.
Mythos, but it was one of the conspiracy theories behind it that the actual royal family had a hand in it. And, of course, the guy who turns out to be Jack the Ripper is also the guy who played Bilbo in Lord of the Rings. So, I mean, come on, I got a full circle there.
Well, of course. Yeah, and a couple of other good Stephen King adaptations here based on movies. Of course, The Shawshank Redemption, even though that's not a horror movie, but that's just...
Oh, and The Green Mile.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you can't, you know, there was some controversy because of the quote unquote magic Negro, of course, but I don't like that. I kind of left that at the door and just took it for what it was, which I thought was a great story. It was actually originally a six part serialized novel.
Mm-hmm.
So you get, yeah, because you would get like the first one, and then like a few weeks later, the second one would come out, you know, and all that. My biggest recollection of getting The Green Mile is I got all six novels and it came in this green bookcase, this little green bookcase, which I thought that was pretty cool. And I would be remiss if I did not mention the original Carrie.
Oh, yes.
I would not. I mean, it would be like the movie changed my life. I mean, and I'm not, don't mean this as a euphemism, but it did change my life. The first time I watched that movie, I was 16 years old. I watched it on HBO, and I wanted to go and read the book. Read the book, fell in love with Stephen King's work, and it ultimately led me down to the path of what I want to do, which is write my own stories. And luckily,
wasn't Silence of the Lambs also based off a book?
Yeah, based on the Thomas Harris novel. Which
Can I change my mind?
Of course.
I love Misery, but I just remembered that Silence of the Lambs was based off a book. I'm sorry. I love Misery. Don't get me wrong. I have to change my mind. Go with Silence of the Lambs.
It's one of those rare cases where the movie's actually better than the book. I mean, I kind of, you know, the character that Thomas Harris writes for Hannibal, he's kind of almost, you know, kind of borderline prissy in a way.
Yeah.
there is.
But then again, Anthony Hopkins kind of brings that prissy to it, but you love the prissy.
You know, yeah, but he's so much more than that. So much under, so much evil.
He's an intelligent prissy.
Yeah, you know, it's kind, you know, but you know, I don't want to say cerebral.
And of course, Buffalo Bill. I mean,
yes, it pushed the lotion in the basket. It pushed the lotion in the basket. Oh my
me.
God!
I'd fuck me hard. Sorry, can't even.
Yeah, and Jodie Foster is Clarice Starling. That she was so good in that when I was.
Now see,
I
I'm gonna cause some controversy. I'm gonna cause some fucking controversy here. I like Julianne Moore better.
No, I totally disagree with you on that one. I thought she ruined Clarice for me.
See, I told you I was gonna cause something. I thought Julianne Moore was better.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch those back to back one of these days and. Just, you know, just so I have some more ammunition. We'll talk more about this here in a little bit because our guest is on the line right now. He hails from St. Louis, Missouri, and is an author. You can find him at Holt Horror on Twitter. And some of his credits include Death's Disciples and The Vegetarian Werewolf. And it is our privilege to have on author Robert Hull as our guest. Robert, welcome to Darben Horror Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for calling. We're looking forward to having a nice interview with you. If you guys want to get in on the conversation, the number to call is 1-877-552-4073. Author Robert Hull is our guest this evening. Okay, so we'll get right into it. Robert, I believe that authors, they don't choose their path. I write stories myself, and I firmly believe that they are called to write. When did you receive the calling to write?
Oh, I don't know. For me, I think I never really transitioned from, or there was a kind of a weird transition from playing with toys to writing. It's like I went from making up the stories with the G.I. Joe guys long after all my friends had moved on to cars and girls and stuff like that. I was still playing with the G.I. Joe guys. And then just at some point I put those down and started writing. So,
fantastic.
But, yeah, I went from just kind of doing that. And you know, I still pull out the toys every now and then and, you know, kind of get a story right in my head before I go and write it.
I'm like that with sometimes I'll have, like, my Star Wars toys hidden downstairs, and sometimes I'll go and look at them and play them myself. I have no shame at all. I have when it comes to that.
I mean, I'm literally sitting in a room surrounded by dolls, so it's like, I can't say anything.
So I wouldn't feel freaked out. You know, is this right playing with dolls at my age? Because we do the same thing. Okay, how would you describe your writing style?
Oh, I try to vary it. It's like Death's Disciples is what I call it splatterpunk, and that. People who are hardcore into splatterpunk read it and say, that's not splatterpunk. Because splatterpunk has kind of changed since its original days. You know, I view it as very much kind of like still in the Clive Barker sense. You know, that's what I view as splatterpunk and not so much the just nonsensical gore. But that was my first book. And, of course, my second book is what I term toddler horror. You know, it's intended for, you know, 4 to 8 year olds, really.
Now, speaking of that, I actually had a question. I've heard of tofu zombies. I've heard of there's a movie about vampires that drink like wine instead of blood. But where did you get the idea for a vegetarian werewolf?
It was just something that happened at my daughter's bedside. My daughter is a vegetarian, and I was telling her a story, and I kind of had to make it something that she could relate to, and made it the Vegetarian Werewolf. And she liked it so much, it was like, yeah, I need to send that to a publisher.
Author Robert Holt, our guest here on Darben Horror Radio. So when you submitted your stories, Death's Disciples, and later on the Vegetarian Werewolf, all authors encounter some kind of resistance, you know, when they send it off to publishers, like, oh, my God, I hope I get published, you know, whatever. Did you did you get a lot of resistance, or did were you embraced, or was it like, hey, this is okay, but it's not for us, that kind of deal?
Surprisingly, no, I didn't get any of that. With Death Disciples, the first publisher I sent it to, which was James Ward Kirk Publishing, he accepted it. It was one of those things. I sent it to him and didn't hear back. You know, it was one of those things. I keep checking my Facebook to see if he sends me a message. And then eventually he's like, sends a message. Yeah, we'd like to go ahead with this. What do you think about, release next month? It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. And with Dexter
cool.
Werewolf, I edit for Grey Wolf Publishing. And she sent me an email saying, we'd really like to publish one of your books. And I was like, okay, well, I was looking at it, and I have another novel that's actually sitting with a couple different publishers now. And I was like, well, I that one's tied up. I have these kid stories. So, yeah, I sent those to her, and she loved it. She thought it was a great idea, and they had done a lot of kids' books already, so it kind of fit in right there with one of their specialties. So,
now, what is the concept behind the vegetarian werewolf? Because us growing up in the world of horror, we've always seen the werewolf as this bloodthirsty entity, out to kill and rip necks off and stuff. Tell us a little bit about the concept, because I know there's more besides just the vegetarian werewolf and other stories. What else is there in this series?
Well, what this is, it's six stories, maybe five or six, I can't recall. But what they are is, I'm a horror writer, and I have a 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
I write at night, right after I put my daughter to bed. And, of course, as I'm putting her to bed every night, she asks for a story. And my mind's already tuned into the horror, So I tell her monster stories. And I tell her monster stories that aren't going to have her screaming in the middle of the night and interrupting my writing to come take care of her. So I tell her kind of like tamed down. I mean, these are really stories that are more tamed down than your average Scooby-Doo episode, So and that's what they are. They're monster stories that aren't really all that scary. Some of them are very creepy, but they kind of mellow out, like my daughter's favorite is the Gargoyle at Grandma's, which is just about three kids sitting on the couch hearing a noise at the end of the hallway, and that just how kids work themselves up, and they're convinced that it's a gargoyle. Another one that kind of does scare my daughter is called The Ghost of the Grapefruit, which is a girl who doesn't finish her grapefruit at morning breakfast and is haunted by the grapefruit all day.
I felt way about Brussels sprouts sometimes. I don't know, Rhonda. Is there a haunted vegetable in your life, Rhonda?
No, I'm kind of fat. I'll eat anything. I'm not gonna lie.
Robert, how about you? Is there like a vegetable that haunts you?
The onion burst big time. I choked on an onion when I was young, and
oh my God.
Ever since then, I get an onion in my mouth, and I just have a natural gag reflex to it.
Oh, no, you know what? I changed my mind. Asparagus.
Oh, I do
asparagus,
too.
Asparagus, if you eat it and you have to go to the bathroom later, everyone in that bathroom will know you ate asparagus.
Yeah, I enjoy
that. Yeah, I do too. But they're just long and scary, and those tips are just almost, I don't want to say spiky, but they can be intimidating.
That's not what I meant at
author
all.
Robert,
okay.
Author Robert Holtz, our guest here on the Arben Horror Radio. If you guys want to call and talk to him, the number to call is 1-877-552-4073. So Robert, who are your writing influences growing up?
Growing up, I was actually really into sci-fi. So I loved Heinlein and Asimov, Sumac. I really got into Spinrad, but that wasn't until after college and all that. I discovered Clive Barker, I guess, in probably like late 80s, early 90s, so middle school era for me, and really got into Clive Barker too. But so I'd list him as probably my biggest writing influence.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. Go on.
Okay, is there any current authors that you're reading today?
Oh yeah, lots. Rocky Alexander's one of my favorites. I'm almost done with his debut novel, Ragman, right. Which is just phenomenal. Chantal, I don't even know how to pronounce her name. Nordelus. Yeah, something like that. She's really, really good. I'm all the time trying to find new authors to read.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing about writing. There's always somebody new. It doesn't grow stale. Say like a TV show or a series of movies or anything. Which leads me to my next question. Ron and I were talking about this before you called us. Do you have a favorite movie based on a horror novel?
I was trying to think of that as I was listening earlier. I think it's probably Hellraiser, based on Hellbound Heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't really think about that because the horror culture is so used to seeing the movie, not thinking about the Clive Barker novels.
Right there with it, I'd say, but probably an equal tie would be Nightbreed or Cabal.
Hmm. Well, that's pretty good choices there. All right, Robert Holt's our guest here on Dollar Bin Horror Radio this week. The number to call is 1-877-552-4073. Now, what did you find scary as a child?
Everything. Absolutely everything. I was terrified of everything. I had two older brothers. They tormented me. They had me scared of just about doing anything.
I know that feeling, except I only had one older brother and one younger brother.
The middle child syndrome.
Yeah, you know. I was picked on pretty mercilessly, but it was one of those things that it got to be the point where I liked it. I liked overcoming those fears. I liked standing up to it. I like that eerie feeling I got in the up my back as I was down in the backyard by the woods, getting up my Star Wars toys that I left out there and trying to hurry back in before the monsters came out and got me,
Now that actually brings me kind of to a question. Was there any kind of movie or book that scared you the most during your childhood? Because you write some children's related horror. So I was wondering if there is some kind of book or movie that when you were younger scared the living crap out of you?
I'd probably say The Dark Crystal.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
the Dark Crystal terrified me when I was young. And now I watch
it. Weird-looking vulture thing. I completely understand.
I watch it with my daughter, and she just laughs at it and kind of loses interest pretty quick. I don't know.
Yeah.
So like I said, I think I was just a coward.
Now, can you tell us about the novel? You mentioned you're working on another novel that's kind of like in limbo right now. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. The working title right now is The Smiling Man, but I think that might end up being the final title as well. And it's again, a different style than my other two books. The Smiling Man is very much like an action horror. The basic premise is there's this guy, the Smiling Man, who goes from town to town, and he leaves monsters behind. And there's a guy tracking him, trying to find him and stop him, and he has to battle the monsters. And the monsters are all almost like B-movie type monsters. It's like a creature from the Black Lagoon, kind of a sleazy bartender werewolf, you know. And but yeah, it's very much just an action-packed book. And at the time, I was reading a lot of action novels, a lot of Wilbur Smith, and that definitely came through in my writing.
I've noticed when I do my writing, it always seems whatever influences you most of the time always seems to seep out in your writing for sure. Mm-hmm. Is there a projected release date or what's the status of the novel right now?
It certainly won't be until 2016, but right now it's sitting with the publisher and that they have shown a lot of interest in it, so I'm hoping they're the ones to take it, just because it's Sinister Grin Press, so that seemed to work. Sinister Grin, Smiling Man, it seemed perfect. And they talked to it too so far, so I'm hoping they take the bait and we're able to put that one out through them.
I hope so. And lastly, I noticed I was reading an interview you did when I was prepping the questions for tonight. I noticed that you're a metal fan, and that's something Rhonda and I are like really hardcore into. What are some of your favorite bands?
Well, I'm kind of an old school metal fan. I love Dio, Testament.
Good stuff.
I'm really getting into Tiamat lately. If you're familiar with them, kind of they're perfect music to put on and write to. They just kind of like drown out the background noise, and you don't really have to do it, and you just set some eerie mood, and I'm really liking that right now.
Very cool. Very cool. And lastly, you have a Twitter page at horthorror.com. Where are some other places that people can find you and your work at?
I'm on Facebook. Facebook.com/ Holt Horror, holthorror@wordpress.com. That's about it right now.
Okay.
I'm working on more.
Awesome. All right. Well, Robert, thank you for coming on the show tonight. It's been a pleasure having you on, and we look forward to having you on again sometime, maybe when you get closer to the release date of your next novel. We talk about some more about that then.
Great. I'd love that.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Robert, thanks for giving us a call, and thanks for listening in.
Thank you.
Right. Have a good evening.
You too.
All right, that was author Robert Holt. And what I took away from it was he was like us, because you and I, we both have our little habits that we do, and we have our own little fears that seem to scare us. But what kind of drew me in was the fact that he listens to metal music too when he's writing. Because I do the exact same thing.
Oh yeah, see, when I'm writing, as odd as it sounds, I like listening to, I'm trying to think of the term for it, and it's like blocking my mind. It's like metal music that sounds like it's from Lord of the Rings.
That's what?
It sounds like it's from Lord of the Rings, like metal music that mixes in with that kind of.
Oh, I'm going to blow this one, but like Renaissance music and stuff.
There's an actual term for it, and I can't remember what it is now. I want to hit myself.
Is it like when I played the Christopher Lee songs here a couple weeks ago? Is it like in that vein?
Sort of like that, but it's even more, it has the old school instruments and stuff in it as well. There's an actual term for it, not Viking metal, which I do love Viking metal, but it's similar to that, and I really can't stand myself for not remembering the name of it, but that's what I like to listen to when I'm writing.
Yeah, I'm kind of like Robert. I'm like, when I'm writing, not all the time recently, because I'm like listening to like newer albums by like older bands. Like yesterday when I was writing, I was listening to Motorhead's newest album, which is really good. I mean, Lemmy, yeah, he's got it. He actually sings a blues song in this one, called Old Woman Blues, which if you listen to Motorhead for any period of time outside of Ace of Spades, you know, it's something you're not used to hearing, and that, but in this case, it's a good sign. I've been listening to that. There's a band called KXM, which is a super group, California Breed, another super group, just different stuff lately when I've been writing. But when I want to go old school, yeah, I'll crank up the Rush's, Caress of Steel, listen to the Fountain of Lamnath, and the Necromancer, and just crank that up when I'm writing. That's pretty much my big routine.
Nice.
And of course, the big four: Metallica, Slayer, Anthrax, Megadeth. You know, that ilk. And speaking of the big four, next week's show is our mid-season finale. So if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that it is Rock and Roll Horror Radio. And that is my favorite show of the year because it's 90 minutes of nothing but music. I dropped my phone. Nothing.
I was about to say, he went bye-bye.
Yes, but as I mentioned, it's nothing but pure music for 90 minutes. We're going to play some commercials from some of your favorite horror movies and some of our favorite horror movies, and we'll be taking requests. So it's the most fun show of the year.
Oh, I have a request already.
Oh God, what's the request?
Since I was talking about my nerdy stuff. Okay, again, I can't remember the style of metal. Oh my God, but there's a metal band called Amon Amarth. And it's actually named after a place in Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm. You'll have to message that to me.
Yes.
Oh yeah, you definitely got to message that.
Come on, it's Middle Earth metal. What the shit? Yes.
Hey, I'm all for listening to something new.
Dude, if Spock had a metal album, I already know you'd be on top of that. So.
If who?
If Spock.
Oh, Spock.
Ooh, Darth Vader metal.
Yeah, there we go. I could play some songs from Leonard Nimoy albums because I was listening to that on the day he passed away.
Leonard Nimoy has a song about The Hobbit. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, I've played it before. I played it when we did that Hobbit episode a couple years ago.
I know. It's the most dumb song, but I love it.
He did. I'm trying to think here. He did a couple of albums of covers. One thing I'm not going to be playing though is William Shatner's Rocket Man.
Oh, please!
I'm telling you that right now. Forget it.
No, please, Dewey from Family Guy doing William Shatner singing Rocket Man right there.
If I can find it, yeah. I'm looking up some of Leonard Nimoy's songs right now. He goes. He does a cover of that Johnny Cash song, I Walk the Line. I may play that.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. Gentle on My Mind. If I had a hammer, I could do that. Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town. Proud Mary. I definitely got to play that.
Oh, my God.
I got to play something from him, but I'm not playing any Shatner
Proud
stuff.
Mary, because I need to hear this.
I will have to hunt high and low for an MP3 of of that. I definitely have to play that. But as I mentioned before,
and
that
I have
is
another
our
request I'm going to send you later. Apparently on the Child's Play soundtrack, you know how they always have a cheesy 80s song for a theme song for horror movies?
Oh, of course.
They made one for Child's Play, and the lyrics are really fucking.
Another song I might want to play is this. Speaking of cheesy 80s songs, I may play the theme from Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, because it is so cheeseball.
I wish I could find it. There's one on this album, I have this weird album of a band, an all girl band apparently, that sings with Freddy Krueger, and there's this song called Do the Freddy.
Oh my God! Yeah, if you can.
Oh my God! What the fuck was that?
Yeah, if you can find it, you definitely have to. You gotta do me a favor and hook me up for that.
Yes, I will find it because it's like do the Freddy, and then you hear Freddy like, I'm like, no.
Oh my God! Oh dear Lord! So the show next week may be a bit,
we're going to have some treats.
Yes, we're going to have some treats. And it's also my 40th birthday next Thursday. So I may be getting drunk as the show progresses.
Your 40th birthday is on Thursday?
Yeah, it is on Thursday.
Oh, crap. Your birthday present might be late.
So I, well, Don't worry about it. You don't have to send me anything.
Yeah, right.
No, you don't have to send me anything. God, I'm 40 years old. I'm going to be 40 years old.
It's going to be.
I don't want to be reminded.
It's going to be awesome. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It'll be late, but it'll be worth it.
I look forward to seeing what it is. Oh my God. Yeah, but you guys may be see it's a rarity. You guys may be seeing me drunk, and as Ronnie can attest, I am not a pretty drunk.
Oh my God.
I am hilarious
if he's
drunk.
Next episode, you must tune in because Eric is such a lightweight.
I'm starting the show sober, but as the show progresses, I may be getting trashed as the show progresses, you know.
Just remember, Eric, you control the soundboard. There's nothing I can do.
I don't know. Yes, I do control this. You're right. I do control the soundboard. So who knows? who knows what sounds I may be producing from? What sounds I may be producing? You never.
Sounds so much worse than you intended it to.
Yeah, you know you're right. Oh my God. But that's next week. That's our mid-season finale. Then we go on we're on hiatus until September the 10th, so mark that down. And for the second half of the season, well, other than we're going to, of course, have, I'm sure Mrs. Elizabeth Catherine Gray will be discussing the rules of this year's Halloween Horror Movie Marathon Madness, discussing the rules of that for sure. And, of course, October is the busy season here, is, of course, the busy season here on DBHR. So, I don't have an idea for a Halloween theme yet. I'm kicking around some ideas. I've done like War of the Worlds. I think that's played out though. So don't know at this point yet. But there's still some ideas. Oh, Rhonda, check. Here we go. I could play. Well, where did that song go? Son of a bitch. All right.
Can't blame the soundboard this time.
Yeah, there it is. I could, come on. There we go.
Okay, now
I can always play, I can always play this song. If it, maybe. If it plays. The soundboard's giving me hell.
Well, sing it.
Now, here it is. I can always play this. Maybe. There we go.
The greatest adventure is what lies ahead.
You don't like this song?
Today and tomorrow are yet to be
you like
oh my God,
music?
That movie just made Gandalf sound like a complete wuss. Like, what the shit?
What's that?
That movie just makes Gandalf sound like a wuss. I can't stand it.
I've never seen the Hobbit movie, the live action Hobbit movie, but wasn't this played somewhere during the movie?
Yes, Gandalf sang it.
Oh my God.
Which is probably the reason that J.R.R. Tolkien said he couldn't stand the live action. And plus the fact that fucking, I think Aragorn had no fucking pants on throughout the entire movie.
Oh dear God.
Gondor has no pants. Gondor needs no pants. What the shit?
And on that note, that wraps up for this edition of Narvan Horror Radio. We want to thank our guest, Arthur Robert Holt. You can find him at Holt Horror on Twitter. And next week, it is Rock and Roll Horror Radio for 90 minutes. So we hope that you tune in and rock out and bang your head. Until next Thursday night, this is Eric Polk saying to all of Replay Nation, good night now.
The greatest adventure is what lies ahead. Today and tomorrow are yet to be said. The chances, the changes are all yours to make. The mold of your life is in your hands to break. The greatest adventure is there if you're bold, can make you delay. It's time you stop thinking and wait.